Attention, spoilers are beginning now.
Sci-fi party line.
Welcome to another episode of the Sci-fi Party Line podcast. This is your hostess, Kat. And today I have with me your other host, Carl.
Why? Why do we put ourselves through this every year?
It's the most wonderful time of the year. You know what? The best part of 2016 is 2017.
You're darn right about that. It needed to be over much quicker. We should have just lost December and we just been around this mess out.
Nah, December was pretty bad. I'm glad all that's back in December. All of December needed to stay in December. But so every year we have a little tradition, and it's called the Sci-Fi Party Line Turd Off.
Oh, it's getting harder every year, people. This is a tradition that gets harder to pass every year. It's calcifying in the belly. In the belly of your host and hostess here. I genuinely feel like I'm losing lifetime here. It's really...
But before we get into the turd off, what we're going to do is we might have been a little light on films throughout the year. So, you know what we're going to do in Sci-Fi Party Line fashion? We're just going to try to talk about all of the films of 2016 right now today.
I don't know how she's going to do this. I'm just going to follow along, people.
We can do this, Carl.
You know, we'll just talk about all films from 2016 and we'll figure it out.
Yeah, It'll work out. I promise.
Whatever. I'm ready. Let's do this.
Well, so we need to really get in there and decide what are the turds and decide, you know, we got to give everybody a look. And we, you know, we're going to be brief. We're not going to like go long winded unless Carl gets excited. You know how he is.
What?
And why don't we start it off with one of those good old January sci-fi films that no one watches.
All right, let's go in order. That's a good idea.
Yeah,
all right.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. All right. Fifth Wave.
Holy crap. You see, look. Look.
Now, Chloe Moretz.
We make, in order to do the party line as well as the turn off, we make certain sacrifices. You know, we couldn't do it. I'm going to tell you right now, we could not bring ourselves to watch The Fifth Wave. Unless, Kat, you're holding out on me.
No.
We talked about it. We saw that perhaps it was not the major blockbuster that some might have expected. And so we looked. We said, you know, that looks like maybe a possibility for the... But every time we brought it up, Kat, you go watch it. Carl, you go watch it. We could not bring ourselves to watch The Fifth Wave. So it might have been the absolute turn of the year, but we just couldn't do it. We just couldn't do it. So, technically,
what?
In the past, you know, it seems so much like one of the turns that we have done in the past that it kind of blurred into the story is something we'd seen before, but you know, hey, I didn't want to go there again.
But you didn't want to see Chloe Moretz do stuff.
Oh boy!
In a sci-fi fashion,
I think she's great. I think she's great. It's just that this story, you know, once again, something we've seen 8 billion times before.
Oh, man, I think we missed out. Her name was Cassie Sullivan, and the guy that was like the leading man, his name was Wounded Man with Crucifix. Yeah, we didn't want to see that.
Okay.
No,
that's just...
not that. That was the leading man.
Oh jeez!
Who is that? Sci-fi party line.
That's my mom. Hang on
for
a second.
Oh my god!
Hello.
This is in the show.
Okay. Hey, greetings, mom. How are you?
Oh my god! This is so super embarrassing.
Okay.
Our oil is changed.
Okay, Bob, I'm so glad that you enjoy seeing Gladys Knight, but I am recording a radio show right now, so can I get back with you a little bit later?
This is gold. This is golden.
I'm glad you had a good day. All right. Love you too, Mom. Bye. Oh man, look at, I don't care who you are. You can't. You can never rush your mom. Nothing matter what you do, because you know. If I say, "Look at it, woman, I'm on the recording right now." It's, well, how are you gonna talk to your mother that way? I'm coming over right now. Oh, geez. Then we never would have finished the show. All right, catastrophe averted. This is seamless. We're just gonna cut that out because Kat loves to edit. We love Kat loves to edit, so she's gonna cut this out so it seamlessly appears that you will never even know that my mom called into the show. All right, and edit, close edit. Yeah. So what? Go on, Kat. What else are we talking about? 2016.
Step over that corpse.
Seamless.
And we're going to talk about a couple of films that we didn't bother to see. Divergent. Carl, we never bothered to see that one. I mean, I watched the first couple. And I didn't hate them, but they were just not as sci-fi as we needed them to be. They were more drama.
Yeah, well, and young adult drama, which can be problematic
at best.
yeah. So you know, we actually kind of enjoyed the first movie. From everything I've heard, even the people who encouraged us to see the first movie,
that would be Hanako. Down. So
I wasn't gonna drop the name out there. My dad, yeah, fine, yes, Hanako. She's like, yeah, y'all didn't need to see the rest of them. That was it. So okay, what else?
We're kind of doing a thing of the ones that could have been turds we didn't watch. There was one called Max Steel, and it was about the adventures of a teenager. And his alien companion. Did you see that?
No, I don't think anybody saw that. No, okay. No.
All right, that's fine. So when we were trying to decide to talk about Turd Off, and we couldn't quite figure out what was going to be the turd of the year, Carl just like came up with three turds that I've never heard of, as well, like the ones that I brought up: Morgan, Max Steel, Fifth Ways. You might have vaguely in passing her, but he brought out some dogs, and that would be called Equals, Cell, Approaching the Unknown. And these films, if you've seen it, you really didn't have anything to do over the weekend. And you were just watching shit, right?
Approaching the Unknown has basically the exact same storyline as Astronaut's Wife and Extant. And somehow it still made a movie. They made a movie out of it. And apparently it was in the theater for about 8 hours. So the take-home box office. I mean, you going to do this? You want to tell them?
You can tell them. It's all you. I don't remember.
The take-home box office for this movie, domestic, $10,000. People, do you realize if I had driven my car to the theater and left it, it would have doubled the box office for this film? I don't know what they did. Even if you know that your movie's a turd, at least leave it in the theater a week. So, you know, popcorn sales, I have no idea what they did. So if you're going to make something that derivative.
So the budget was $1.3 million, and it only made $10,000 box office. That's rough.
That's like one theater. How is that possible?
I didn't even know it came out. And it had fine actors such as Mark Strong, Luke Wilson, Sanaa Lathan.
There you go. but then again, it's just, I mean, the story is just like Astronaut's Wife, just like Extant. And we know what blockbusters those were. So clearly, a path laid by those two fine examples, they wanted to just, you know, dovetail on, ride on the coattails of their success with another. I don't know what was going on. And here's the other thing.
I kind of want to watch it, though.
No, see, here's the other thing. You know, when we're picking our turd offs, we go back and forth and we kind of tease. But, you know, we try to sort of balance. We pick like a big block, but, you know, big box office blockbuster that sucked. And then we try to find some little film that might have had some kind of unique charm, but also really, really sucked. You know, that's kind of the balance that we do, you know, when we choose our films. So typically, I do go mining for the smaller films that may not have done. And the other thing is generally, I have the patience because, you know, I like kind of cheap sci-fi. I have a soft spot for low budget sci-fi. I'm willing to give stuff a shot.
What, like Cell with Samuel L. Jackson and John Cusack, which no one's watched?
Let me finish. Generally, I'm willing to give the low-budget sci-fi a shot. You know, I'll watch it just for fun because it takes me back to my 80s and 70s sci-fi stuff. But this year, I don't know what it was. These movies, I either couldn't find them. I was so unmotivated to see it. I just kind of let it go. So it's been a rough year, people. It's been a rough year. We were just, all right. So those little ones, we didn't see them. One, because it was only at the theater 8 hours, and the other one we couldn't find anywhere. And so
and then the other one equals was Kristen Stewart, who was in the film with some guy. And it was two young lovers living in a future devoid of emotions discovered that a disease had the power to give them emotions. And so they, in their sci-fi futuristic world, had emotions, but it's like Equilibrium, but bad.
Yeah, it sounds like Equilibrium. And what was that other one that was sort of like people had the times on their arm? And they, you know, the time
I know what you're talking about.
That one.
Yeah, that's not. Yeah. So those are the films that we and you most likely did not see because you just could not.
They didn't make it. They just didn't even make it.
Yeah, but I can't believe this Cell one with Samuel L. Jackson and John Cusack.
That is a dynamic duo if I ever heard a pair to get me into the theater.
Like nobody had, I never even knew this existed. Right, that had to be somebody had to spend money on that. I don't know. Okay. All right. So that's fine. So let's get into ones that were smaller yet a little bigger. That's not really a technical term, but we're just gonna roll with it. I mean, like 10 Cloverfield Lane.
Okay. There you go. I see what you mean.
Yeah. You know what I mean? Okay. This one, very good compared to the first Cloverfield. I had Fury Upon Exit on the first Cloverfield. I did not like it at all. But they say this one's going to be different. It was going to be compelling. But then I saw some of the trailers and I was like, what is this, Misery? But with a guy. I don't understand what's going to happen. And
How's it sci-fi Misery? I didn't get that.
Yeah, but it worked.
It was watchable. I'm not gonna say it's my favorite film, but it was watchable. It was watchable. The transition between the mystery of what was going on and, you know, the misery portion of the film, and then when it became monsters at the end. Remember the film Monsters, which another one that we talked about. You know, the transition was so jarring to me. The stuff that made the first part work didn't seem to connect to the second part. The stuff that made the second part exciting didn't seem to match the first part. The separate pieces were fine, but as a whole movie, it just didn't quite fit for me. And that it was okay. It was okay.
You know what it felt like? It felt like it was a piece of that film, of that one monster film, that it was low budget. And it was like these monsters just kind of, it was sci-fi monsters. And you couldn't go in one area or something because it was like toxic. But they
monsters?
Were like, oh, yes, monsters. Sorry. Yeah. It was like monsters.
It was monsters.
But it was better than monsters to me, mainly because I enjoyed the misery part. I liked the mystery of like, what's going on? Are they really aliens? Of course, we knew they were because Cloverfield. But like, why is this guy, he is trying to save them. He was trying to do a good thing. Then he's really weird. And then like, was he a child molester? But what now? It was weird. It was bizarre. But then like how she like went Project Runway, made a suit, figured out that the air wasn't toxic only if the aliens are blowing their breath on you or whatever. And then like, she went to join the fight or what, I don't know. I thought it was enjoyable. I enjoyed it. And it didn't pull the bullshit first person blah blah, you know, like the first film did. It wasn't it didn't try to be cute and be like absurdist or anything like that. So I enjoyed it for that. So
yeah, well, you know, I don't know why they felt the need to put Cloverfield in the name, honestly. Really, if it had not been called that, I think a lot of the confusion or chaos would have been squelched, because it was just you go into it trying to figure out what its connection was to the first film, and you're asking that the whole movie, and then when it gets to the end, really, it didn't have to have been the same, quote, aliens from the first film. Maybe it wasn't, you know, maybe that's just us putting stuff on. I don't know. I just wish it had been called something else.
The first one was Walking Dead. This one was Fear the Walking Dead. They were two different things.
Wow.
I mean, that's not a good, but I mean, I enjoyed this film more than I watched, like, Fear the Walking Dead. But I mean, I feel like that's what they were doing. This was maybe roughly the same time as the last film, but how other people approached it.
The countryside version of it. Maybe.
I don't know.
All right.
That's fine. Speaking of other weird aliens, we had this nice film that Carl seems to really like and a lot of people really like, and it's called Arrival.
What in the world? I thought we were going to be covering more films. Are we supposed
to cover? We are. We're going to cover. We're coming down to it. But that one, there's a thread.
I'm waiting. So
there's the thread here is weird aliens and air that you can't breathe. And so that's what made me think of Arrival next. And I got to tell you, hated it all the way. This was a drama. The aliens looked like hands walking on the table. And it looked like those hands were leaving coffee stains on a glass in a vertical fashion. It non-linear time. That happened better on Deep Space Nine. The lady, it felt like it was a contrived attempt at a pro-choice agenda about, hey, if you knew that the baby that you were going to have was going to die, would you still have it? And she's like, yeah, I still would. And then her husband is like, you made the wrong choice. And then like, what were they doing the whole film? They were staring. They were having this flashback, flash forward. I mean, the twist was just bull crap. It wasn't it might've been a first encounter, right? But it wasn't, it didn't sweep me off my feet. The aliens look like Black Dove soap floating in the air. You know what I mean? I just was not impressed with this. I thought this, people who liked it, maybe I was in a mood, but I really felt irritated by this film. So Carl has a different take on it, and I'm really curious to see how he overcame all of these clunky, trying to be beautiful sci-fi alien whatever, and it didn't work for me. Okay.
Now, we are supposed to be covering all the films. Arrival was actually one of my favorite films of 2016. I am not joking. I loved Arrival. And it was because it was cerebral. There wasn't a whole lot of explosions and a whole lot of flash and stuff.
It was not cerebral.
It was cerebral. It was like they were putting puzzle pieces down throughout the whole film, and then at the end they came together in a way that was interesting.
Newborn freaking babies can put a puzzle together.
I'll admit, because if you're a fan of Doctor Who or other stuff, the opening monologue of the film gives away a little too much. It tells you right away what's. I mean, if you are a fan of this nonlinear kind of storytelling, you kind of know where it's going. In that first little dialogue that she has with the audience as they're coming through the patio deck or whatever. If she hadn't said that, I think I would have enjoyed it even more, because I would have liked experiencing things in the nonlinear way. I can't remember what it is she says exactly, but she gives away a couple too many hints. But it doesn't matter. There was something very real about the experience, about the first contact experience in this movie. that I thought was really interesting. The disorganization of how you address it, and the difference in terms of the how big the aliens were and how big the challenge was, and basically they just kind of wheeled up in a little cart. It was just, there's something very real about that that I thought was enjoyable. I enjoyed the deciphering of the alien language. I enjoyed why the alien language meshed perfectly with the story that they were telling. The reason why it is circular is the same reason that the story was non-linear. How that fit together made so much sense.
We've seen this 500 times before. I don't even understand how you fell for this.
The palette was very charcoal-y. So when you're watching the film, certain films have a certain palette to them. And when you're watching it, some are bright and flary and some are blue and metallic. This one felt like watercolor charcoal that the whole way through, which on one hand I found a little disturbing, but it did create a real space and a real something about the watercolor charcoal-ness of it. Felt like a dream, felt like a memory, and yet you were seeing it in real time. It really, really was an interesting film. I totally don't get your disdain for it. I will 100% agree that we have seen this story before. We've seen it in Doctor Who, and we've seen it in other sort of non-linear. Because I'm hesitant to call it a time travel movie, because it didn't really have the time travel essence and component of time travel. That, you know, there's non-linearness happening, but you know there's no wacky machine, there's no lightning bolts, there's not that. But the non-linearness of the story is not heavy-handed. It comes in really toward the end, and in a way that accents the story that we've seen. So when the story ended, when this movie ended,
I was annoyed.
It felt, compared to everything else that I had seen this year, 2016, that year, it felt refreshing because it was unique in its take. It felt different because I really did exercise my mind when I was watching this movie.
Your
I
mind just is felt, very tiny.
I'm just saying it felt so much more like I got to engage my brain with Arrival compared to anything else I'd seen in 2016.
I felt like they wanted to make you feel that you would be engaging your brain, and it was heavy-handed. Like, they really wanted to be atmospheric and deep, and they really wanted to play with your emotions, and it wanted to be an artistic expression with a circular charcoal length. It felt like they were trying too hard to do all of that. And it was over the top and miserable to watch.
I will say, you know, it wasn't very amateurish to me. I'm not going to say it was amateurish. It's not amateurish. I will say it was a little heavy-handed in some spots. I'll definitely say it was heavy-handed. But I forgave it because of everything else that they did right. It was an interesting movie.
I just want
to back up one last thing. When I talk about the language in it, I'm surprised you didn't go for this, but a lot of times sci-fi movies will build up a MacGuffin, and when they finally, you know, explain what it is, when they finally show you what it is, you're like, we went through all that, and that's all.
That's what I felt.
That is not what happened with Arrival.
That's what happened.
When they sat down and they handheld us through the deciphering of that language. And then when we finally understood what it meant, and then when we finally understood how it fell in with the broader picture of the whole story, it was nice.
The language was stupid because if they can communicate with flashes of future and past and everything, and they were communicating with her the whole time. She had no question. She was just getting up, going to work every day with her and a vision of some dead baby or an alive baby or some kid she doesn't know anything about. They could have communicated. If they could communicate with flashes like that, we didn't have to sit through the torture of the circles.
She doesn't understand that it was nonlinear. She didn't know what it meant. And the aliens didn't know what linear time was. So it was a clash between how aliens see everything circular and simultaneous.
If they didn't understand linear time, how did they even understand it enough to communicate to them what they needed to do in order for Earth to be helped or whatever? Because I still don't see how Earth was helped. Would if they stop a world war? Well, the only reason the world war was going to start was because that they were there. If they had never came.
No, that's not. Come on. You know, that ain't true. We do not need aliens to have a world war. And especially at the advancement of technology that we were at this point in the movie. So no, I think you're being hard on it. I think you're being too easy on it.
I
will absolutely say it was heavy handed in some spots, and some of it, you know, we'd kind of seen before. I'll give you that. But I'm telling the way that the pieces came together, I really liked it. I liked the environment that they made for this movie.
That's fine.
And I liked the story.
We're gonna come back to it because to me, that was one of the turds. Well, because we got to talk about turds. We have to measure our turds.
Well, so we should have saved this then.
That's fine. No, we're gonna talk about movies in order and how they make sense. Okay, so one that I also, let's see. We have Passengers.
Yeah.
That happened. That was a sci-fi film that I think a lot of people did not see.
All right.
I heard that a lot of people heard what the film was about and just got frustrated and didn't go see it. And I didn't quite understand why this premise was such a turnoff for people.
Well, I mean, the twist in the movie, or let's just say the moment in the movie, is the problem. All right, so, you know, we want to go here. Let's talk about it. Passengers, I actually liked the film. I like Passengers.
Too. I didn't hate it. I liked it more than I liked Arrival.
That's not saying a lot. So can we use another metric? I thought Passengers was pretty good. It was light. I like the effects and the space. That the ship was beautiful.
It really
was a believable space that they created. I liked it.
The clothing was perfect.
I just
loved it.
So I like Passengers.
What was the problem moment? The
problem was the moral dilemma. The moral dilemma that occurred, where basically you got your crazy hermit guy shopping for popsicle chicks and thaws out the one he likes and then forces her to fall in love with him. That's what the problem was. That's the moral issue.
But did he go crazy and he just like wasn't making good decisions?
He
was the only person on the ship and he went crazy.
It is true, but the problem is, the problem is did that justify him imprisoning her with him? That's the real issue that you have to deal with.
It doesn't justify it, but if you were to take a step back and realize that he was alone and some people can't, like me, I'd have been fine. Other people can't handle being alone because, I don't know, maybe they don't like themselves as company. But, I mean, that's what they say or something. But
the only way that this you could have morally sort of justified this is if he had randomly chosen a woman on the ship. If he had ran, it was all about, you know, he saw a beautiful woman that he liked and then dug her out in his social media profile. And then
he saw her in a moment. She was there the whole time. And she laying there the whole time. It's just that he had a moment and he looked up and then she was just like, you know what I mean? It wasn't like he went shopping for women. He was trying to destroy something, and he was trying to do something, and he messed up, and then he looked up, and then he looked and he saw her, and it was a moment. It wasn't like he was going down a shopping mart.
You can cast it that way, but the man's been on the ship by himself for a year, skipping through the cryo freezing area. You telling me that is the only person in the entire year he's been skipping through the whole ship that he happened to see someone else, that he saw another woman?
He saw a lot of other people, but not at that moment that he had the epiphany that he should wake up someone.
I don't think the epiphany was to wake up someone. I think the epiphany was to wake up her.
But and he didn't think about it until he saw her. It was her, not anyone else.
Well, that's the problem. So, I mean, look, it's a fine line, and, you know, it's fiction and all of that. But here's the other thing. If instead of Chris Pratt, it had been Stephen Buscemi aboard that ship, and he woke her up. I'm just going to say, all right, you know, you ladies can cast it however you want. But, you know, being woke up by Pratt is very different than if it had been some other guy. And so, yeah, I'm just saying there's a moral grayness about that particular point of the story. And that's what caused a lot of the grief in terms of people seeing this movie, particularly the ladies that I know took issue with that. Now, not as many of them did because it was Chris Pratt. But that's my point also. You know, that's my point also. But I have problems
with Chris Pratt. I don't think he's attractive in that way. And it's weird for him to play the sex symbol to me. It's bizarre. Like I see him as funny, geeky guy that we can relate to. And now that he's this, I'm a hot sex symbol. It's weird to me. It's a little gross. So I don't know what to make of him in this.
When I saw the previews for Passengers, I was intrigued by the premise, but I had wished it had been anyone other than those two. Yeah. I really think they could have given two other actors, and it would have been great if they were new actors, but it could any two other people a chance at this, because the story is not that innovative or hard or unique. It could have been interchanged with any two other reasonably attractive actors. I'm feeling that they are a little overexposed, and I did not get anything new from their performance in this movie that added to their careers. So I would have loved to have seen this with two other people, and it's just dawning on me now. I'm trying to think what other two people would I have liked to see. I don't know. I'm just saying, when I saw it was them two, I was like, oh, all right.
I think a lot of people felt that way because this film, let me tell you about this film, Passengers. Passengers, it had a $110 million budget. The opening weekend, it made $15 million. And domestic box, it only made $90 million. So it lost $20 million.
Wow. Well, that's domestic, right? It did better.
For some reason, we know that domestic only matters when they decide these things. Worldwide, for some other reason, doesn't. I don't know, because worldwide was 237, which you're like,
it might also have been the time of year. I mean, not just that it was the holiday, but rolling off the heels of Rogue One.
Nobody wants to see that. Yeah,
this is not quite a similar tone, and sci-fi on the holidays isn't always a winner. I question the time of year that they chose to release it as well. But anyway, But overall, though, again, as you know, people refer to films as popcorn or romps. This I would call a romp. All right, this is a light. It was light. It was pretty. It was sparkly and interesting. I liked Passengers. It was not a real cerebral film.
You know but what? I don't need your insults, your backhanded insults right now.
I'm not talking about you. I wasn't going there. I wasn't going there. I'm just mean, yeah, you know, you in did. General. I didn't.
Whatever.
So, all right. So, thumbs up for Passengers. Great.
Okay,
great.
That's fine. So, unfortunately, I did not see Fantastic Beasts.
Oh, yeah, I meant to. I didn't get to
it. Oh, you didn't
either.
See it either? Good. I did. We're not going to talk about it. I'm pretty sure it was awesome. I wanted to see it in theory. Like, I'd even said, Eric, I'm coming to San Antonio to see this film. And, like, it was over Thanksgiving, and I just couldn't do it because I just didn't have the time. So, yeah. Let's see. Do we have any other spacey? Okay.
Well,
no, I'm talking about spacey. I want to do, like, I'm trying to do them in... Okay. Space.
So, genre order.
Mm-hmm. Right, kind of, because you yelled at me for breaking out Arrival too early. But so, you know what? Let's go Deadpool.
All right. We'll begin the superheroes of 2016. Yes.
Yeah. So Deadpool was a surprise to me because we know how Green Lantern went.
We were all wary. We were very, very wary.
And Ryan Reynolds...
Yeah, hit or miss with Ryan Reynolds. It's either, you know, really big hit or really, really big miss.
What has he done? What other things has Ryan Reynolds done?
R.I.P.D.
No. Wasn't that on our list of terms?
Yes, I mean, that's what I'm saying. It's a hit or a big miss.
But what has he done that we, like, really liked? Let's see. Let me think if I can. I'm going down his IMDb really fast to see if he was in anything that we were like, yeah, he was in X-Men Origins Wolverine.
Yes, he was, barely.
I forgot what he was doing.
His mouth was sewn shut, so that's why we don't remember.
Blade Trinity. Yeah. Oh, my God.
He was
in The Outer Limits. X-Files. I remember that.
What are you doing? I'm supposed to be picking movies.
Yeah, I'm trying to figure out what he was in that really was really good. And I can't really find anything. So I think Deadpool is it.
Yeah, he'd been waiting for years. I mean, that was his film and everybody knew it. That was his film. It matched his nutty personality. He had the quote legacy from the previous X-Men film. It was his chance. And he just took it and ran with it.
To death. Don't know what happened with Green Lantern. I feel like he promoted the hell out of that movie. I felt like when he was at
Comic-Con,
when he recited the what's it and everybody got the super oath. Pumped. The oath. Yeah, I never even heard the damn oath before and I was pumped up and I was just like, hell yeah, this is gonna be the
Yeah, no. His trying to sell it wasn't the problem. It was the film that was the problem. Really, it really was the film.
Okay,
so
we're not going to talk about Green Lantern, but we're going to. I mean, Deadpool was perfect from start to finish.
Yeah,
it was so funny. It was refreshing. He was not over the top. He did not try too hard.
He was over the top.
I mean, Deadpool is by nature over the top, but he wasn't like, you know how when somebody's trying too hard, that's what I meant.
And for example, if it had been played by Jim Carrey.
Yeah. I mean, he was dipping a toe into Jim Carrey.
That's my point exactly.
But it wasn't.
Right. I'm just saying it could have easily gone off the rails. And nope, he kept it firmly on there. It was great. He really did a great job with it.
Do you realize this budget for the film was $58 million and domestic box was $363 million?
Well, see, look, the whole time getting Deadpool made was a battle. They acted like they did not want to make this
film. Because Green Lantern, everybody was scarred.
Well, yeah, but they keep putting Ryan Reynolds in other stuff. Why don't they just give him the money?
That sucks.
Yeah, but my point is look at all these films he's been in. Why do you keep putting him in stuff that's not his thing? And the one thing that is his, y'all, oh, I don't know. I think we should put him in another body-switching film. That'll sell. You know, stop. Just stop this insanity. Give the man the damn film. So I don't get what they were doing and why they were so hesitant. You've been at DragonCon with me. There have been hordes of Deadpools for like three years running before the film came. Just Deadpools all over the audience was begging
the
for this movie.
The only thing that was more abundant than Deadpools were what's the
Stormtroopers?
What's the Suicide Girl?
Oh, Harleys.
Harleys. It was all Harleys and all Deadpools.
Yeah, it's true. So
this
movie
made six times its budget, Carl. Six times.
It was about damn time.
That's insane. I don't think any other movie did six times their budget. They should crown him king. And he should be president, really. I'd go for it. From the first scene where he counts it down and we're like moving throughout the it's a mannequin challenge, basically, you know what I'm saying? And then they speed it up to show it all, like, how did all this happen? And then we go through the whole thing and I'm like, wow, this film is crazy.
It was just fun. I mean, so many of these films these superhero films, and I'm not going to name a name right now, but they try to take themselves so seriously that it just saps all the joy out of what is supposed to be a superhero film. And so to go from literal cemetery scenes to the nuttiness of something like Deadpool just shows you what you can do with the genre and why they ought to like. It's supposed to be a comic book it's based upon. You know, it doesn't always have to be.
Oh my God, quit trying to talk about other films.
So dark. So why there was only one film like Deadpool with superheroes is why it's so shocking. I mean, geez, there's so much fun.
They had my girl Morena Baccarin.
She did great.
Oh my God, I love that woman.
She was rough in this film too. She was no, you know, like dainty damsel. She was gangster.
Plays dainty damsels.
Yeah, true. But I mean, you know, when you're thinking of a typical comic book hero and his girl, there's a certain pattern that's maintained. And these two, they were made for each other. They were really, really made for each other. She was out of control.
I like how they celebrated every single holiday and sex was involved.
Of course.
Was hilarious.
I think that's the way it ought to be.
It's Canada Day. Oh, yeah.
There you go. Pick out the leaves. The maple syrup, baby.
That's not. All right, so that's Deadpool. That one is not a turd.
Yeah. Beautiful.
Okay. You know, since we already brought it up, let's go Suicide Squad.
All right.
I was not looking forward to seeing this one. I avoided it like the plague. In fact, I think I only saw it last month. Yeah. And the coming of this film is, I think, why I have currently, and I apologize, superhero fatigue, because this film felt like it had been coming along with Batman vs. Superman for 3 years, and I just got worn out. And not only did I get worn out, I was worn out with the Joker. I was like, oh my God, I'm sick of the Joker. I'm sick of hearing about Jared Leto. I'm sick of everything about this film. And so I when Carl was like, we gotta do it, Kat, suck it up, and I was like, fine. And I was pleasantly surprised by this film, Carl. I actually, dare I say, liked it. There was one thing in particular that stood out to me, and it was the lack of Joker in it. And it was how, you know how usually there's a male superhero and then like his girlfriend is the sidekick? To me, the Joker felt like Harley's sidekick, and he was defined by her character. And I absolutely enjoyed that because it was so different. And they didn't try to hammer it home with like, yay, feminine power, let's throw up our uterus. You know, it was just, it was something that just kind of happened. And I was like, this is enjoyable. Second thing about it that I enjoyed, Will Smith. What? He was just normal and hanging out. You know what I'm saying? I don't know. I was just like, hey, look at you. You kind of grew up and you're still a little funny and you're still hardcore and you're okay, Will Smith, I like you. And then I kind of liked everybody else, and I really... this wasn't what I expected it to be, and it was a lot more enjoyable. I mean, it wasn't perfect, but it was way better than I thought it would be.
Mm-hmm. Well,
okay, Carl, piss on me. Oh wait, no. I'm not Trump.
It was okay. Yeah. Oh, is it doing this stuff?
Gross.
It was slightly better than I thought it was going to be. I think my expectations were properly managed for this film.
Mine were really low. Mine were really low.
Well, I mean, but see, you've been trying to give up on superheroes for like a year and a half now. So anything I'm thinking would be better for you. As a genuine fan of the genre, part of it is we're getting real tired of origin stories, okay? Origin stories for some superheroes, they are unique, but there comes a time when the origin stories all start to sound alike and they all start to be alike. And the building of the villains, when we learned about the villains and as we learned about their backgrounds and as we learned about their first demonstrations of their abilities, I just was underwhelmed with their abilities in this. I did not find any of their abilities nor their use of their abilities in this film really interesting. And
and sorry to cut you off. Let me ask you a question about Arrow. When we saw the Suicide Squad presented in Arrow, I thought here in the film Suicide Squad, they did a better job of presenting. And I thought, what's her name that we like from How to Get Away with Murder was evil. And I loved it. What's her name? How to Get Away with Murder.
Oh, you're talking about, what's her name? Yes, she runs Cadmus, right, the Cadmus lady, right? Well, okay, so yeah,
And then go back to your tired of origin. Now, see, I've heard Eric say this before, he's tired of origin stories. Do you think that's what my deal is that I'm sick of origin? Like, I don't,
Well, I know you.
I liked Ant-Man. Viola Davis.
Well, yeah, right. Waller. That's Amanda Waller is her name. So, okay. Well, I know that you are a genuine fan of sci-fi and that you have a pretty strong separation between comic book superheroes and sci-fi as a genre. I know for you, that's a big jump. So, I don't think it's the origin stories that you're tired of. I mean, if you read comic books and you watch the superhero films the stories as much as the old comic book fans have, we've seen an awful lot of these origin stories. We've been introduced to a lot of these superheroes and we know them well. And so if we're going to see them in a movie, and we're going to see the story of their creation or their birth or their first use of the power, it's got to be something special. We know the story already. So And what's worse is so many of the superheroes have similar origin stories. So again, there was a time where the special effects of the movie were so dazzling that to finally see them in live action meant something. But we've crossed that threshold. Then there was a time where there were only a certain number of superheroes that we saw. But that threshold is passed. So now, if we're going to do this, there's got to be something about the creation. I mean, there's got to be something about the introduction of the heroes. It's got to be special.
Well, I think the thing that was special about this one is that, you know how you were talking about the charcoal effect of Arrival? Well, I thought this one had a very
neon palette.
Yeah.
It had a visually, I'll give you that. There was a unique, vibrant neon palette to it.
I think it was
that. No, that was different.
Well, no, that was different, but I'm talking about, like, it's different than, say, Iron Man or Thor or
visually,
Spider-Man.
Yes.
Now, you don't find visually. It was a different enough from those.
The problem is, but not in a good way. I mean, this is DC trying to do their thing. I mean, not DC. It's like the Warner Brothers. Warner Brothers versus Marvel is what I'm trying to get at here. It's sort of like Marvel has a formula that really works, and the stuff that they've been able to do, they've got a formula that does work. And, you know, even within their universe, they've got a certain variety that moves at a certain speed, that's developed in a way that is enjoyable. But Warner Brothers hasn't quite found it yet. And whenever I see one of their movies, I'm always on the edge of my seat as to, are they going to be able to pull this off? There's something. They just haven't quite gotten it totally right yet. They've got flashes and they've got moments that I enjoy, but they just, so when going into Suicide Squad, that's why my expectations were low. I was like, okay, are they going to do this? I wasn't real impressed with Will Smith's look in this movie, which bothered me. I thought Will Smith's performance was okay. But I wanted him to be one of the headliners. I miss Will Smith. I miss the nuttiness of him.
What about his look did you not like? Like, what about it? Like, what was wrong with him? I thought he was okay.
Well, he was relatively true to the comic book, which was great. But the problem with that is it looks kind of scruffy and not in a cool way.
Hancock. It reminded me of Hancock. Oh, Hancock, like the previews for Hancock turned me off, and I never wanted to see that. And that ended up being a really cool film.
I won't go that far.
But Hancock.
Yeah. Okay. We'll get it. But the look of Hancock and his character in that movie was totally different than, and when I say scruffy, I don't mean that he looked unkempt, although he did, and in Hancock that was part of his character. I mean Deadshot, that's his name, right? Deadshot. He just, there's something off about the look of him that I could never quite get comfortable with. That put me off of him, and it just didn't work for me. How he came across. So that meant that I was never really that engaged in any of the characters. Of course, Harley's the one that I liked the most and who I was looking forward to seeing the most. But even she didn't get the growth that I hoped for. I like the point that you made, which is Joker really was the hanger-on of Harley in this film. He was the plus one, and as evidence from the fact, he disappears for a huge swath of the movie. We think he's dead. So, you know, that's all right, but it just didn't quite work for me. There were just pieces that didn't seem to fit well together. The villain was interesting, but then they seemed unmatched for the villains that they put against her, and how they won just kind of seemed sloppy and not in a fun way. So, Suicide Squad was not my favorite of 2016.
It wasn't my favorite. I'm just saying it surprised me.
And I watched it just so I would be able to have an opinion about it. But when it was over, I was like, okay, well, that's done. You know, that's done. And that was it.
We've already did an extensive podcast on Batman versus Superman, so we won't get into that too much. I kind of feel like maybe you were referring to the darkness and the dismalness of certain comic book characters.
Films, and that
you were talking about.
I was very bothered by the film. Very bothered by the film.
I'm going to say that wasn't Batman in Suicide Squad? He was in it.
I can't even remember.
He just wasn't like the star, but he was in it. And he was doing things.
Didn't he like grab Joker or something?
Like,
or
he did a few things. He did a couple of things. And I thought that was really surprising for them to put him in the film. And I was like, this is cool. Now, you know, my preference as I went in not wanting Ben Affleck to be Batman, but now he's kind of my favorite one, which feels weird.
That's weird.
I just thought he was a balanced Batman, but whatever.
How balanced? Really? Balanced is how you would describe the Batman in this?
I would say that, like I said, Christian Bale to me felt more Bruce Wayne and not Batman. But then, what's our guy from the 80s? Michael Keaton felt less like Bruce Wayne and more like Batman. You know what I'm saying? Because Keaton didn't feel rich. He didn't feel upper echelon. He only felt like Batman. And Christian Bale felt upper echelon, but he never felt hardcore Batman. He was just like, rich boy. It worked. It was it for a while. But then you see Ben Affleck, and Affleck. I'm sorry.
Ben Affleck. He's very upper crust. Yeah.
I'm not saying he's upper crust, but he has a certain. He knows how to pull off the New England upper crust thing, and he also knows how to be scruffy and Batman. To me, he pulls off the balance of the two.
I'll say that I was pleasantly surprised by his performance, and I look forward to seeing him in another movie. I will say that. I mean in another Batman movie. I look forward to seeing him in another Batman. I think that his dark obsession in Batman versus Superman was completely irrational.
And
I like Batman. So to see him acting a straight up fool for this whole film, it really bothered me. And this being the first introduction of Affleck's Batman to me, seeing him acting that way, I'm like, holy crap! This bothered me, because the other thing about Batman is he's an inspector. He is an evidence-based guy. He's a thinker. Batman is smart.
Oh, he's a thinker and he's cerebral, like your movie Arrival.
Why are you going back to that? Now, listen, I'm not even talking about that. What I'm saying is genuine. But seriously, Batman is smart because he doesn't have native superpowers. He really has to figure mess out, and he thinks a lot, and that's one of the most interesting things about Batman to me. Now, he's trying to contain his rage, and it's done in various degrees, from comic books to movies. But to see him all rage, he felt more like a Hulk than a Batman in Batman versus Superman. And for him to then have enough to be able to put together something against Superman, that is, you have to be very controlled. You have to be very smart. You have to think through a strategy to catch Superman. And that is not really what we saw in this film. And so to get Hulk Batman, and how things played out, and the whole Martha thing, just the characters didn't quite feel true to me. And for that to have been the linchpin behind so much of that film, just it was kind of hard to watch. It was hard to watch. So yeah, no, Batman versus Superman, and of course then you put the Nolan darkness on it. You know, holy
Nolan
crap.
Stank.
The Nolan. Look, I like Nolan stuff generally. I do. But you know, sometimes there's this heavy shroud that gets on stuff, and that's exactly what happened.
Wait, Nolan just didn't do that.
I know. I'm just saying. It's the only way I could describe it. Who's the other one that did it? Who's our guy that did Ex Machina?
I don't know.
Spike Jones. They have this way of making stuff so dark that on one hand you can respect the mood of it, but then it pulls the joy out of stuff that you're watching. You're like, holy crap, does it have to be this dark? So anyway, so that's you could feel that in it, and it was disturbing to me.
So you know what, Carl?
Yeah.
What we're going to do is we're going to take a break.
Okay.
And we're going to let them know that this is the first part of our Turd Off and our year-end wrap-up. We want you so far. We know we got you. I know my stuff about Arrival. People are going to write in because I feel like I was wrong about that. But that's how I felt. It was honesty.
You
I was being
all
honest.
Alone. I don't know why you hate
me. I know I'm all alone. And you agree with Eric. I'm just letting you know that you and Eric agree about this film. So that should tell you something. That's all I'm saying.
Please. We're not going to even go there right now.
And that's
now.
Our show. We love your feedback. Give us a call on your phone. You can just like pick up the phone right now and call Sci-Fi Party Line and leave us a voicemail, 773-336-2686. We also have a website where you can leave a comment, but our comments really shine online in our Facebook group where, you know, people can talk back to you as well. We get good comments there on Facebook and on Twitter at us at Sci-Fi Party Line. No one uses Google+, but if you must,
we are there. Yeah, yes, we're also in MySpace. If you want to drop us a note there, you can find us.
iTunes reviews, we still like those. So, thanks for listening to the first part of this.
So this is how we're doing. This is how we're gonna do this, Kat. This was your plan from the beginning. Is how we're gonna do.
Yeah, we hope you enjoyed the show, and we'll see you at the party in like 5 seconds.
Yeah. See you soon. See you soon.
Bye. Question mark.